Tomorrow we're bringing you two programmes exploring the rich musical history of the city's Thomaskirche and its most famous cantor, J.S. Bach. In the early music show at 1 o'clock, we reveal how, when Leipzig hired Bach, they were settling for the mediocre.
And at 5, we explore one of the city's oldest but eternally youthful musical institutions. We'll be celebrating 800 years of the St. Thomas's Boys' Choir.
Musical Leipzig, then and now, Sunday on BBC Radio 3.
Hello, I'm John Shea. Welcome to this Saturday afternoon on Radio 3. And today's early music show, in a couple of minutes, pays tribute to the singer Montserrat Figueras, who died last year. That follows the news, read now at just after 1 o'clock, by David Cornett.
Diplomatic efforts are being stepped up in an attempt to halt the violence in Syria. The former UN Secretary-General Kofi Annan has met the Syrian President Bashar al-Assad in Damascus to call for an immediate end to the bloodshed. According to activists, more than 70 people have been killed by government forces in the past 24 hours. After their talks, President Assad said no political solution was possible while armed terrorist groups were spreading chaos. Mr. Annan will meet representatives of the opposition in Syria later in his bid to secure a ceasefire. At a meeting of Arab leaders in Cairo, the Qatari Prime Minister has called for Arab troops to be sent into Syria. But the Russian Foreign Minister, Sergei Lavrov, warned against what he called crude interference in the country. The Liberal Democrat leader, Nick Clegg, has insisted that the party has hugely altered the government's planned changes to the NHS in England. Lib Dem activists holding their spring conference in Gateshead will decide shortly whether to vote on a motion calling for the health bill to be scrapped. The leadership is keen to avoid any revolt. The leader of the Scottish National Party, Alex Salmond, will tell his party's spring conference in Glasgow this afternoon that independence is a message of hope for his country. Scotland's First Minister will also announce a new £5 million scheme designed to help young unemployed people return to work. Thousands of people have demonstrated in the centre of Moscow against the re-election of President Vladimir Putin. Officials say he won a clear victory, but the protesters say there was widespread fraud. A memorial service for PC David Rathband, who was found hanged at his home last month, has been taking place in Newcastle. Mr. Rathband, who was 44, lost his sight 2 years ago when he was shot in the face by Raoul Moat while he was on the run from police. The weather, cloudy across many parts of the UK, but some sunny spells, particularly in eastern and northeastern Britain. Tonight it'll be cloudy and misty in exposed western areas with extensive hill fog and light drizzle in some parts. BBC News and Weather at exactly 3 minutes past one.
From David Cornett. In an hour from now, another chance to hear last Monday's recital from the lunchtime recital from the Wigmore Hall in London. Truls Merk and Katia Bunyatishvili play cello and piano sonatas by Beethoven and Rachmaninoff. That's at 2 o'clock. Before that, here on Radio 3, the early music show. Here's Catherine Bott.
She can be dramatic or passionate, facetious or sorrowful, a young girl who wants her freedom and is only restrained with difficulty, and a saintly soul in a mystical union with God. The words of musicologist and critic Mary Berry, describing the singing of Montserrat Figueras, who died last November. Montserrat would have been 70 years old next week on March the 15th. And in today's early music show, we're celebrating the life and work of an exceptional performer. With me in the studio is harpist Andrew Lawrence King, who worked with her and her husband Jordi Savall for more than 20 years. Let's begin right away with music, as Montserrat Figueras sings Yo me soy la morenica, I am the dark maiden.
Yo me soy la morena, yo me soy la morena, yo me soy la morena, yo me soy la morena.
Montserrat Figueras singing an anonymous Spanish villancico accompanied by viols, percussion and harp, that last instrument played by my guest today, Andrew Lawrence King. Andrew, Montserrat really was a dark maiden, blessed with raven-haired, high-cheekboned Iberian beauty.
Yes, she was. I heard her singing long before I met her in person, but when I met her, she looks exactly like how you would imagine a Mediterranean singer to look.
And you had the very sad job of writing her obituary for the Guardian newspaper. That must have felt like a tremendous responsibility.
It was, because as well as a very, very respected colleague, she was a close friend, and there's a very strong, almost family feeling within the ensemble led by Jordi Savall and Montserrat. And so it was something I really wanted to try to do well for them.
So let's go back. That 20 years you worked together. What was the first collaboration you undertook with Montserrat and Jordi?
In characteristic fashion, the very first thing we did together was a crazy concert where I arrived a little bit nervous, in very, very good time, got my harp in tune and waited for the rest of the musicians to arrive. They arrived a good 20 minutes before the performance was supposed to start. Jordi passed me a huge pile of photocopies and started explaining to me that, you know, we begin here rather in the middle of the piece, and then we do a bit at the end and we go back to the beginning and all of that three times. Oh, by the way, it was down a tone. All these kind of things. Some of this information was correct. Not all. And I didn't even speak to Montserrat before the concert. We rushed on stage with last-minute instructions as we went. The very last thing I remember being told just as I walked on was, oh, yes, you play the first 16-bar solo. So there was my mind full of all of this. But then Montserrat sang these pieces, many of which I already knew, having listened to them when I was a student. And there was this voice and this personality that I'd already got to know on recordings. And there we were on stage together. We spoke afterwards.
So a real baptism of fire that turned into a 20-year friendship.
Yes.
A great way to start. Well, Montserrat was born in 1942 into an amateur musical family in Barcelona, and she sang in one of Spain's first early music ensembles, Ars Musicae, in her early 20s. She eventually went to Basel to study early music at the Schola Cantorum Basiliensis, but much more significantly, before that, she met her husband, Jordi Savall, when they were both studying cello in Barcelona. They formed together the group Hesperion 20, which is the old name for the Iberian Peninsula, and they formed the group in 1974, and their first record was Music from Christian and Jewish Spain. Andrew Lawrence King, it should be obvious that she's from Catalonia, that her voice would be ideally suited to Spanish music, but what was it that made such an affinity between the music and the voice?
I think Montserrat was always interested not only in the music and, of course, the texts that she was singing, but in the cultural background to those texts. So, as a Catalan, she saw herself, yes, in the context of Spain, but also in the wider context, her vision of her voice and her cultural background was of this sort of pan-Mediterranean culture. But then also, and in the late 20th century, this was a big theme culturally, the reconciliation with Judaism after the horrors of the Second World War. And, of course, there was a long history of the Jewish religion in Spain, and so she was putting the songs that she was singing in this cultural context. And I think this, together with the special sound of her voice and her own familiarity with these languages, this is what sort of positioned her approach to the music.
Montserrat Figueras, accompanied by the members of Capella Real de Catalunya, directed by Jordi Savall, in a song by Cárceres, Soleta soy yo así, Here I am all alone. But if Spanish music was the music with which Montserrat Figueras is most associated, it wasn't the only kind of music she sang. Here's a translated extract from an interview she gave in 2010. It is not enough to listen to it with your ears. You must listen to this music with your soul, your spirit. You listen to it in a different way. We're lucky because Spain is a melting pot of different cultures. When you hear music, traditional Spanish music, you feel the influence of the East, India, Islam. However, we always express it in our own way, blended with different cultures, with respect, and having in mind that it is in our veins. And in fact, the latest CD from Montserrat Figueras and Hesperion 21, they changed from being Hesperion 20 to 21 at the dawn of the 21st century. The latest CD is La Sublime Porte, Voix d'Istanbul, which is a case in point. Thank you. An anonymous Greek lullaby, Sleep My Baby, and before that, a Sephardic romance about a thorny rose, both sung by Montserrat Figueras. And both those tracks appear on the Alia Vox label. Andrew Lawrence King, tell me about the entrepreneurial instincts of Jordi and Montserrat. This was their label, wasn't it?
Yes, and a very brave thing to do at a time when it seemed that the classical music recording industry was you know, facing disaster, to start your own label. But I think the secret of their success has been a very, very clear artistic line focusing on their ensembles and their individual performances. And also the very clever linking of the recordings to concerts and making very direct contact with their audiences.
And so far we've talked very much about the instinctive, soulful, spiritual approach, but Alia Vox and all their projects together were absolutely backed up by solid research, weren't they?
Yes, and one of the things that Montserrat and Jordi developed in the more recent years were these huge projects. Rather than going for the kind of minimal CD booklet that has been the approach of some companies, Alia Vox started making these very, very big double, even triple CDs with a lavish booklet, fantastic illustrations, and very, very detailed historical and cultural background. Just what interested Montserrat herself personally and what informed her approach to the music. Now all of this is being offered to the readers and the CD listeners. It turns the CD into what we used to call a coffee table book, something really to sort of enjoy over a period of time, not just to sort of stick in your car radio and listen to once in a while.
I only met Montserrat a few times. I never worked with her, but she struck me as a very charming person. What was she like?
She was charming and apparently very gentle, but with a will as strong as iron when needed. And she was somebody almost sort of out of touch with our present-day world in a beautiful way. So in spite of all the travel and all the international concerts, she was very mistrustful of flying and trusted her instincts so that if it wasn't the right day for her to fly, she would not fly. And sometimes that meant that travel arrangements were sort of re-established at the very last moment. It must have driven organisers completely crazy. But this sort of, you could say, fey side to her character was all of a part with this instinctual, spiritual approach to the music and to performing. And she just resisted being pigeonholed. This allowed her and Jordi to make the recordings they wanted to in their way and to perform concerts. They have a way to make a concert a little piece of their world. So certainly for us, the musicians in the ensemble, but I think very much for the concert audience too, they have a feeling of coming into another world, a world in which the 21st century is there but doesn't really intrude.
Well, we're going to go back quite a long way from the 20th century for our next music, in fact. This is early Christian Sibylline oracles, and it fits in very well with the repertoire that she loved so much.
Thank you.
Stern words from Sibylla Galaica there, sung by Montserrat Figueras. And when those who acted wickedly are taken off to hell, and when all the kings stand humbly before him, and when he shows all these dread things, that by your beseeching he may take us into his paradise. You're listening to The Early Music Show with me, Catherine Bott, and with me in the studio to talk about the life and work of the Catalan singer Montserrat Figueras, his harpist Andrew Lawrence King. Andrew, was Montserrat happy to stick with the wonderful world that you've conjured up, the world of Hesperion 20 and then 21?
She was very happy in this world. It was a world that she and Geordie had created together. She did explore other repertoires, but later in her career came back to this core repertoire, although a huge core repertoire, the whole of what we would think of as early music across the whole of the Mediterranean. That's quite a large core repertoire. In all the variety of different styles, whether it was Monteverdi or these very early medieval laments, in all these styles, she always found her way to connect to them, which was this instinctive way, thinking of the text, thinking of the cultural background.
Well, together she and Geordie made some interesting outings to other territories, and I'm thinking of the next music that we've got coming up, which is from the film soundtrack to the wonderful film about Marin Marais, Tous les matins du monde, and that further propelled Montserrat and Geordie to international fame. Maria Cristina Kier, Montserrat Figueras, Rolf Lislevand playing the oboe, Pierre Antaille on the harpsichord, and Georgi Savall playing bass viol in Couperin from the third lesson of Tenebrae for two voices, and that's from the soundtrack to the film Tous les matins du monde. Well, let's talk about Montserrat's actual singing, and here I want to quote your beautifully written obituary from The Guardian, because it really is a very personal paragraph here. You say, Montserrat's approach to all these repertoires was instinctive and intuitive, spiritual and expressive, rather than academic. To accompany her on medieval instruments or baroque harp was a delight and privilege. It was sometimes also a challenge. Her generous rubato in slow pieces and irresistible sense of fun in fast rhythms were combined with an irrepressible spontaneity. Often she would abandon ideas fixed in rehearsal, trusting to what felt right in the moment of performance. Well, you've already given us a hint that the rightness in the moment was obviously the most important thing. But what about her singing? I think we have to mention the fact that for some people, Montserrat's unique voice was an acquired taste, shall we say.
Yes, I think it's like Marmite. You either love it or you hate it. And like Marmite, it can be dark but also sort of glittery. It's for sure always full of flavour. I first heard her singing when I was an undergraduate. I was studying in England and I was listening to English cathedral choirs and the Clerks of Oxenford and these very pure, very, very high soprano sounds. And to hear all the rich sounds of Montserrat's voice was a complete ear opener. And it went together very well with Geordie's approach to instrumental sounds. And I mentioned in the obituary her very special way with rhythm, where in slow songs she would choose a particular syllable and dwell on it because the spirit moved her that way in that moment. In the fast songs, we all teach our students that, you know, don't go too fast, staying that little bit slower and in control is better. But Montserrat really liked to push the ensemble to the limit. And, yeah, sometimes it felt like a fast ride on a very exciting machine where the rest of the ensemble are sort of hanging on for dear life. And I have to say, one of my favourite memories of Montserrat, it was something that happened very often, was that at the end of one of these sort of breakneck, breathtaking performances, she just sort of stepped back from her central position and just before taking a bow would sort of catch the eye of the rest of the ensemble with this sort of irrepressible smile. I mean, there you could see the young girl in her and the enthusiasm that had captured her imagination for early music. What made it work in performance was the long experience of working together and the very deep trust between the members of the ensemble.
It's very interesting listening to you because having heard and seen the group in action live in concert, that's exactly the impression that I have, this strong feeling of trust without which you can't really do good chamber music. And the overwhelming impression I'm getting of Montserrat as an artist is that despite various caprices, you might think of them as caprices, there was an underlying total sincerity to her as a singer and as a person.
Oh yes, this sort of capriciousness that you mentioned, it was never for her own sake, it was never for mere show, it was always because this is how she felt in that moment, the music really had to be. And of course in any ensemble there are sometimes artistic disagreements, but it was always very clear that Montserrat's way of doing something was very, very deep. Instinctive, but a very, very deep instinct.
Well, let's hear the two of you together. This is Canzo del Ladre, the song of a rueful and repentant thief with a plangent, plucked introduction.
Just a joke.
the anonymous Song of the Thief, sung by Montserrat Figueras, accompanied by La Capella Real de Catalunya, including very prominently there my guest today in the studio, Andrew Lawrence King, playing the harp. Andrew, Montserrat and Jordi knew for about a year that she was gravely ill, but she was able to continue working and they were able to keep this sadness to themselves for a long time. I mean, she died last November, but she was recording, and you last worked with her in August, I think, of that year.
Yes, we did a concert in the north of France and she sang all her favourite pieces, and she was in great form. She was sounding super. She was obviously enjoying the concert, and we had a very nice time together.
So you can take away a very happy memory of your last musical collaboration. How would you sum her up for future generations of early music lovers?
I think Montserrat's voice is one of the voices that will define this period of our early music movement. It's a voice that for many will define that cultural area of Spain and the Mediterranean coast. And it's an approach to the music which is very different to what we're used to here in England, sometimes less analytical, but often more in touch with deeper cultural resonances and very, very instinctive and personal. This is one of the sounds that we'll remember for many years, a sound that we'll associate both with the past and with our own time and our own rediscovery of early music.
Well, I'd echo that. Thank you very much, Andrew Lawrence King. Let's leave the last word and music with Montserrat Figueras herself. With Hesperion 21, she sings a Sephardic romance from the year 1492. And first, here's more from that interview with her from a couple of years ago in translation. We follow one path, we head in the same direction. Each of us seeks the same thing in their own way. It's the need for exploration, deeper analysis of music and cultures, which are the reflection of historical civilizations. Every day, we have contact with music. We have lived together for over 2,000 years. Everything is ingrained in us, all weaknesses, experiences, adventures, languages that people have got to know, the history of mankind. This music is like a mirror. It reflects and shows all that was in the past and what we are like now. Life, too, what it was like in those times. As vocalists, we have texts which we must express, explain, using words. Words are extremely important. That's why it is, in a way, the creation of a recipe for music, which is not listened to as something new, but as music which has its own history.
Thank you.
The Rose is Blooming, sung by the late Montserrat Figueras. Today's early music show was celebrating her musical career in the week which would have seen her 70th birthday. It was presented by Catherine Bott in conversation with the harpist Andrew Lawrence King. The programme was produced by Sam Phillips, and from Monday you'll be able to download a podcast version of the programme from the Radio 3 website. bbc.co.uk/radio3 is the homepage, and follow the links from there to the Early Music Show page.
The world's most famous lover. And his long-suffering manservant.
Madamina, il catalogo è questo, delle belle chiamò il padron mio, un catalogo che ho fatto io. Osservate, leggete con me.
Don Giovanni is about to meet his match. BBC Radio 3 brings you Bryn Terfel and Gerald Finley in a new production of Mozart's opera. Opera on 3 at the Metropolitan Opera New York. Hear it live. Tonight at 5 p.m. on BBC Radio 3.
Before that, beginning in an hour from now, Saturday Classics with James Jolly. And this week he's looking at what makes a great conductor, what his skill or his ability to inspire an audience. That's Saturday Classics at 3 o'clock. Now, though, just after 2 o'clock, time for the Radio 3 lunchtime concert and a second chance to hear last Monday's live broadcast from the Wigmore Hall in London. It's introduced by Louise Fryer.
Well, I don't know how often we've had a duo consisting of a Norwegian and a Georgian here at Wigmore Hall, but that's what we have today. We're going to be welcoming Truls Mørk, one of the most distinguished cellists on the world scene, together with the Georgian pianist Katia Bunyatishvili. She's 24, a recent member of the Radio 3 New Generation Artists Scheme, and currently making a big name for herself at some of the world's leading festivals and concert venues. They're going to be playing two works for us, both from the core of the cello and piano repertoire, Rachmaninoff's one and only sonata for the two instruments, and to start with, the Cello Sonata in C, Opus 102, No. 1, by Beethoven. He could fairly be called the creator of the modern cello sonata, producing five in all, making him not only one of the first composers to take the form seriously, but also one of the most prolific. Opus 102, No. 1, was the fourth of the sonatas, published together with its companion work, Opus 102, No. 2, in 1817, which puts it right at the beginning of Beethoven's so-called late period, when his search for deeper expression took him into new realms of formal experimentation. He actually described this particular work as a free sonata, reflecting its unique layout. Two fast movements, each preceded by a substantial slow introduction, the second of which recalls the music of the first. And to play Beethoven's Cello Sonata in C major, Opus 102, No. 1, here now are the cellist Truls Mørk and the pianist Katia Bunyatishvili.